Welcome to Witch Lit, a place to talk about the craft of writing and writing the craft. I'm your host, Victoria Rashke, author, publisher, witch, and nosy Scorpio. Witch Lit is brought to you by Thousand Volt Press, a family-owned independent publisher established to produce the books we want to see in the world. All our titles can be purchased directly from thousandvoltpress.com or wherever you buy books. If you'd like to support Witch Lit, please consider buying us a coffee at ko-fi.com/witchlitpodcast. In her more than 30 years as a storyteller and visual designer, Amanda Hughes has written and designed over a dozen works of literary, Southern Gothic, and women's fiction under pen names A. Lee Hughes and Mandy Lee. Mandy is the founder of Haint Blue Creative, a space for readers and storytellers to explore, learn, and create. She holds a bachelor and master of science in psychology, and she has worked as an instructional designer for nearly 20 years. When she's not writing, Mandy enjoys movies, theater, music, traveling, nature walks, bird watching, and binging The Office. She's a tarot enthusiast who uses the cards to enhance creativity and foster wellness. Her book, Mystic Storyteller, A Writer's Guide to Using the Tarot for Creative Inspiration, and Companion Tarot Deck are coming in La Panthère Studio in 2024. Mandy lives in Georgia with her husband and four sons, two of whom are furrier than the others, but not by much. Amanda Hughes, welcome to Witch Lit.
Hey there. Thank you so much for having me.
It's always fun to read somebody's funny bio. I always appreciate it.
It's different to hear it read than to read it.
Exactly. So we have lots to talk about. I really enjoyed Mystic Storyteller. Thank you. First question for everybody on the show is, you know, in our age of short attention spans and visual media and just things being on fire, why write? Why write books?
I don't have any other choice. The ideas come to me and they nag and nag and haunt and hang around until I write them. So, it's almost like these stories want to be written and they've chosen me. And so I feel like it's my, it's just my calling to write them, and how therapeutic it is, you know, to be able to create worlds and escape for a little bit, as you mentioned, in this crazy, you know, fast, very petty and, you know, sometimes dismal world. Yeah, we can create beauty and escape to it.
Yeah, no, I love that. Yeah, I think that for readers, you know, it is definitely escapism, but for, you know, it can be for us too, which I love.
Oh, absolutely.
Go disappear into our worlds we're creating for a little
while. That's right. That's right. Everybody knows me there and they love me. So I'll go over there.
Exactly. So you talk about this a little bit in Mystic Storyteller, but for folks who don't know you, I just wanted to kind of give you the opportunity to talk about like your writing and publishing journey. Like, so how did you get that first book out there? Like why did you start writing, I guess?
Okay.
Or when?
Let's see. I wrote my first novel in 2013. And prior to 2013, I had just been writing poetry, short stories, a lot of journaling, I'm a painter and I draw and just doing a lot of art throughout school and throughout college. And then I wrote 211 research papers for my psych degrees. But 13 years ago, I decided I couldn't lose any more sleep over these stories that kept just really badgering me and wanting to be told. So I said, you know what, I'm going to write a novel. So I wrote the novel and self-published in 2013. But in that process, I sent the book to my editor. And while it was with my editor, I was taking a walk after work. And I love to go for walks in beautiful places. And so I was fortunate enough to walk at a park that I lived in the Tarpon Springs, Florida area. And Fred Howard Park is a park where you walk out of on a causeway and you're on this causeway walking out to an island. So you're surrounded by water and it was so inspiring. And I remember walking, this was while the book was with the editor. And this was, so I'd written the book in 2013. So this was 2014, 10 years ago. I'm walking, and then all of a sudden, this woman appears in my mind. It's an image of an older woman. She had really dark, beautiful mahogany skin, and she had two silver braids that were hanging over her shoulders. And she was hunched over a table looking at a selection of tarot cards. And I remember that walk as the image kind of came in, you know, it fizzled into my mind. I stopped and I was like, tarot cards. Oh, my goodness. What in the world? Because my only experience to that point with tarot had been through what Hollywood had, you know, sensationalized and all of those. The death card means death and all of that. And I was like, holy cow, what in the world am I doing with this? Who is this person? What story does she want to be me to tell? But first and foremost, in order to know that, I need to know about these cards. I need to know what I can expect. And all that's just kind of how the gears started turning. And I bought my first deck and started researching. And then I wrote my next novel, which is, it's a duology. It's two parts. It's called The Scars We Choose. But while I was writing it, I was using the cards to understand the story, but I found that I was being inspired by the cards. They were helping me to understand how to write the story, not just understanding the characters in the story. And so in the process of writing a couple of other books, after that, I started making notes about my process of using the tarot. And then, boom, 2020 happened. I've got all this time on my hands as I'm, you know, at home and working remote and just kind of figuring out what to do creatively as an outlet. And I started writing the book Mystic Storyteller and teaching using those notes and my experience to teach other writers how to be inspired by the cards. So that's a short, long story.
No, that's great. Yeah, no, that's great. It's funny. So when I sat down to read the review copy of Mystic Storyteller, I thought I was reading the little white book.
Oh,
I didn't realize at the time it was the whole book. And so I sat down and I was like, oh, okay. And then I was like, oh, this is like if the little white book could tell you everything it wants to tell you, basically. Right. Yeah. And I love that. I have other decks that have like a full standalone book with them. Yeah. And I do think it gives you insight to the process of that deck in a whole new way. But your book does more than that. It's not just about the process of creating the deck and what the symbolism of the deck is, although that's there.
Yeah.
The thing I loved about this and reading it is, especially with the major arcana, you're telling your own story too. It's a little bit memoir on top of everything else.
I keep hearing that it is. And I'm like, you know what? I guess it is. I share a story first that's, you know, the card influences a story, a personal story. And then we break down the card and then we do a spread and an extra writing exercise. And so, it was, I know it was very therapeutic to write those stories.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I really enjoyed that. It's just a very different, it's just a different take. And I love the history. I mean, the history of the tarot is fascinating and I've had a couple other tarot folks on, including Stacey Williams-Ang, who's doing publishing this with you through La Pantera. And so did you think when you wrote that first novel that you'd be writing a nonfiction book about tarot?
I had no idea that I'd be writing a nonfiction book about tarot. I knew one day I wanted to write something nonfiction that was instructional. Because I've been an instructional designer for so many years, I knew I'd like to produce some type of a book that could be helpful. Mm-hmm. But I just had no clue until the moment that the tarot came to me. It was just not on my radar. Mm-hmm. And then as I started writing the book, I thought, well, you know, hopefully something will come of this and I'll pitch it to agents. I've got all of the submission guidelines from like Red Wheel Weiser and Llewellyn and a lot of other different, some small presses. And I thought, you know, I'll pitch and I'll see if it gains any interest. There's a little story behind that as well, if you're interested.
We're here for stories.
So what had happened was last summer, in, I finished polishing the draft in April. I sent it to my editor. It was going to be with her for May, June, and July, and it would come back to me in July. And so while it was out, I just was, you know, kind of decompressing and coming down from having just gone through that whole experience. As writers know, novelists who and writers of books know, you have to unwind and you have to like just kind of, you know, let it all out and kind of figure out something else to do with your time. So I was sharing a post about my most recent novel that I published the previous year, and it's called Only the Rocks That Float. And I pulled a card from Southern Gothic Oracle, which was the deck that I'd used that inspired me while writing that novel. And I pulled a card. It was the horseshoe card, which means luck and all kinds of things. But particularly on that card, it meant luck. And I posted on Instagram a post of the card and the book cover. And I tagged Stacey Williams Ung, who is the author and creator of the Southern Gothic Oracle, and kind of told the story about how I'd used her deck had really inspired me and had been a real tool for inspiration. Creative inspiration while I was writing that novel. Well, she saw that I'd tagged her, and she had seen me tag her some other time. So it kind of, now I popped up on her radar, Hank Blue Creative. She said she'd seen that name before. So she DM'd me and she said, "Hey, thank you so much for telling me that you used my deck to write this novel. How can I get a copy of your book?" And I was like, "Oh my goodness, I'm such a fan of her work." Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, I'm so honored. Sent her a link to the book. She purchased it. She read it. She loved it. She said, "I need you to call me." So she sent me her number, and this was in July of last year. So I'll never forget, on 777, if you do the numerology, July 7th of last year was 777. She called me and she said, I said, "What in the world? What's going on?" You know? And she said, "I want to work with you. I want to build a tarot deck with you." And I'm like, "Oh my goodness, really?" She said, "Yeah." I said, "What kind?" She said, "You tell me." I said, "I want to design a deck for storytellers, for writers to mm-hmm. be inspired." She said, "Let's do it." And I said, she said, "Tell me more about why." And I said, "Well, I just finished writing this my first nonfiction book, teaching writers, and it's with my editor, and I'm going to pitch it to, you know, to publishers." And she stopped me and she said, "Stop right there. I'm going to publish your book." And I was like, "Okay, let's do this." And within a month, we had a contract and a plan. And a year later, here we are, a little over a year later, here we are. Yeah. Yeah.
For listeners, the day of recording is the day that the backer kit launched.
Yes.
So it will, the backer kit, period will have ended by the time this airs, but you'll still be able to pre-order. So yeah, we'll get to that at the end.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that's super exciting. And yeah, it's funny. I came across Stacey's work, I think, when the Botanical Oracle came out, when the Southern Botanical Oracle. And then I found out about the Gothic Oracle and then immediately had to have it too.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And if you're a Southern storyteller, you need to have that in your collection.
Yeah, it's just, and Stacey's artwork is beautiful. And I asked her to be on the show and she's like, "Well, I'm not a writer." And I was like, "Well, you design and write and do this whole thing." And so she agreed to be on and we had a lovely conversation. So yeah.
The nerve of her to say she's not a writer. I told her that. The nerve. You are so much a storyteller.
Yeah. And I mean, I think, you know, with all of the stuff she's done, like, I can't wait to get my, Rhythm and Blues tarot.
it's so gorgeous. It's just beautiful.
And she had she was working on that when we talked originally. That was already kind of in the offing. So it's just, it's so funny how, like, I know, like, social media can be the bane of our existence, but sometimes those things happen and it kind of makes it worth it, you know.
It really does. You know, it can foster, of course, it fosters relationships and it can make connections and it can really get you, you know, really in front of an audience of folks who you would not have the opportunity to meet. One of my best friends I met through Instagram She lives in New Zealand. And I would never have met her had it not been for social media.
Yeah.
I've met and have now developing a friendship with Teresa Reed, Tarot Lady. I would have never been on the Tarot Lady's radar had it not been for social media and her fantastic review of the book. So,
No, it's always fascinating to me how those connections come together. And I feel like Stacey is one of those connector people.
Yes, she is. Mm-hmm. She's a galvanizer of, of people, certainly.
Definitely. Yeah, I'm kind of sad she and I are so far, like we really bonded over our conversation about how similar our, the tracks of our lives had been. And I was like, yeah, it's just funny.
Yeah,
it's
she's
funny.
From West Tennessee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Uh-huh. You know, for Tennesseans, people who aren't from Tennessee, like, and it's true of a lot of other big states, but like West Tennessee and East Tennessee might as well be other sides of the moon for most people.
That's what I hear.
Yeah. It's a weird, it's a weird phenomenon, but, I mean, now I live in Northern California and Southern California is the other side of the moon too. So I get it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like Georgia. I'm in Georgia, you know, Alabama, that's our next door neighbor, but we couldn't, and according to us, we couldn't be any different.
So. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So you encountered the tarot through this. I mean, I love writer visions because I think a lot of people have them. And sometimes we don't talk about them because you can get labeled as a little bit weirdo, as if writers That's aren't fine. Already labeled as weirdos.
We are the weirdos, mister. Label us. Fine.
But how, I mean, you talk about this in the book, and so I don't want to give too many spoilers away, but I do kind of want to give people an idea of like how you use the tarot as a writer. Like how do you interact like with the deck or the images as you're writing?
Okay. So the illustrations, no matter which deck you have, they're wonderful, especially your most favorite cards, the ones that really speak to you. They can serve as guideposts and they can help you to like maintain a mood, maintain your creative juices along the way, but they can also serve as placeholders. So I use them for planning out like a story arc. It could be just a simple 5-card story arc where it's, you know, starts with the beginning of the story, rising action, climax, falling action, conclusion. Or I can do a more elaborate 7-piece story arc. Or I can use just the major arcana and I can start with the fool's journey, the fool all the way around to the world. And then I can, that way I'm using the cards to plan out the story, plan the novel throughout the process. And in the process of planning the novel, I want to really, I want to craft believable, real, you know, relatable characters. So the court cards, which stifle a lot of people, are like, oh, those pesky court cards. I don't know what to do with them. Those court cards are characters. They are archetypes. If you think of Carl Jung and the Jungian archetypes, there's 12 main ones. Well, you know what? In this book, in Mystic Storyteller, I identified 99 plus archetypes that the tarot includes. And so you can use those as character, those archetypes as avatars to represent the characters. So I might think, okay, and like in I'm penning now a 7-book fiction series, which I'm in the planning process of. And the page of swords represents one of my main characters just because that individual in both in Pixies, Pamela Coleman Smith's deck images, traditional images, and also in our new Mystic Storyteller deck just reminds me of this particular character. And so it's planning, it's outlining, it's character development. And then my other favorite way of using the tarot is for helping to troubleshoot through writer's block, through you know, those plot holes. While I'm planning this novel, I know the beginning, I certainly know the ending. I know what that climax, you know, scene is going to be and kind of how that's going to pan out. But there's just this, you know, how do I get from the climax to the ending? There's kind of a gray area. You can use those cards. You can select, you know, cards at random and just leave it to the universe to inspire you. Or you can go through and look at all the cards and be inspired by different ones and kind of plug them into that hole. And then, boom, you've got an idea for what to write in that space. So, yeah, I would say those are that's just, that's how I work with the cards to get these books out.
And I will say for listeners, one of the things in the book is you have a lot of layouts for that. Like you actually show how to lay out the decks and things like that. And I love the idea of the fool's journey, but you pick a different card for each of the, kind of just shuffle the deck and pick one for those 21 spots.
Right.
Which I was like, oh, that's brilliant. I mean, that's how you mix it up, right? And I mean, a tarot deck, like a playing card deck, has infinite possibilities.
Absolutely. Yep. So. Each card has its infinite story possibilities. Mm-hmm. Then you go pairing them up, the cards up. Right. Now I'm putting two cards together. Oh, and now I'm putting three cards together. And there's just, it really is. It's infinite. That's why it's one of the reasons why that Lemniscate's hovering over the magician and the person in the strength card, their head, because there's just infinite possibilities.
Which reminds me, you said hanging over their heads. Like one of the things I love about the deck, Mandy was gracious enough to send me a partial deck, a review deck.
Yeah.
And I too love the original Rider-Waite-Smith artwork, but it is very much of its time and it's very white.
It is. It was. So,
and I do love that your deck is expansive in a way. Like it takes definitely inspiration from Coleman, but has like just kind of blown it up into our modern world and all of the ways that we interact with each other. And I really appreciate that about it.
Thank you. It was an absolute necessity. Like I was not going to design a deck if it were not inclusive all the way around, period. You know, inclusive and you fill in the blank. What does inclusion mean to you? It's that. I wanted to honor Pixie's work. I think that she was such a phenomenal storyteller and just so glossed over and, you know, historically as a storyteller. And I wanted to really honor her because she inspired me so much and her story inspires me. But I wanted folks to pick up FOLX, anybody pick up this deck and find representation in it. You can relate to someone. So there's, you know, diversity with race, gender, creed, nationality, generational, diversity. It's just really, body types, just everybody gets a card.
Yes. And I love in the book for those who read the Mystic Storyteller book as well. A lot of those people in those cards are people in your life, including you.
So Stacy, as we were planning the cards, I said, I have a spreadsheet. My Gemini rising has trouble being a pantser and a plotter at the same time. So I was like, well, I have a spreadsheet and I have notes of what I'd like to see for each, you know, interpreted for the artist who's Roz Kazaz. She's a fantastic artist out of Canada. And she was like, okay, but she said, I just hear your voice so much in this book. I really want to see you in the card. And I'm like, oh, really? Oh, I hadn't even thought about that. So I was like, oh, no, I really love the hermit. That's my favorite. But that makes any sense. And I'm like, I love the high priestess. She said, I think you're the magician. You should be the magician. And I'm like, oh, okay. All right. So I'm the magician. And I, you know, made the cover. And I was like, well, that's probably the first and last time I'll be the cover girl of anything. let's put it out there. That's not the last time I'll be the cover. And then I was like, well, you have to be in it too. She was like, Queen of Wands. She knew she wanted to be Queen of Wands. And I'm like, yes, that tracks. So then we were like, okay, well, let's pay homage to the people who mean a lot to us. And the illustrator was like, yeah, let's put some little Easter eggs in there. And so my next immediate thought was my least favorite card in the deck. If you are a tarot enthusiast, you likely have a card that you can't stand. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was the Emperor. And I thought, oh my goodness, if I'm going to like the Emperor in my own deck, I better make sure that individual is somebody I love. So I made him my husband. And I put my husband as the Emperor. And now I love the Emperor.
Yeah.
Now I see him in a different way.
Oh, I feel bad because I can't remember the name of the artist, but it's the artist that painted Obama's official portrait.
So that's Kehinde Wiley.
Thank you.
Kehinde Wiley.
That card kind of reminded me of his work.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you. What an honor. Great, great artist.
And I'm so glad you knew that off the top of your head. Like I always, like it was in there somewhere, but I knew it wasn't coming.
You know, I had the honor of seeing the Obama portrait and Michelle's portrait as well, who was Amy. I can't remember her last name. She's a friend of a friend, though. But mm-hmm. yeah, up in D.C. back in 2019, it was just breathtaking. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, to be compared, I will pass along that message to our illustrator. She'll love to know that.
Oh, well, good. Yeah. So how did Roz get involved in this project?
So I was like, okay, Stacy, how do you feel about me illustrating the deck? And she's like, honey, I know you can do it, but you're going to have too many other things to do. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay. So she said, let's find somebody. So we shopped around and got a couple of no's because while they were honored to be asked, they didn't have a bandwidth to be able to.
It's a lot of artwork.
It's a real commitment.
Yeah.
It's a real commitment. And so we came across Roz. We were looking through Instagram. We were looking for illustrators and we came across Roz and we loved how she illustrated people. And that's, of course, very important to get an illustrator who does people really well, specifically proportion of the hands and feet and the head and everything.
Yeah.
And her work was just, it was stunning. And I really wanted a deck that was, of course, you know, paying homage to Pixie's illustrations, but more modern. And I love Modern Witch Tarot by Lisa Stirl. I think that's how you pronounce her last name. And I was like, so I want something more modern like that. And then we happened on, I remember one evening I got a DM from Stacy and she said, I think we found our illustrator. I'm going to send her a message now. And she showed me her work. It was just gorgeous. So Rosalind Kazazian, and she goes by Roz Kazaz. And so it just kind of, we searched again, social media. Yeah. It's one of the benefits, connecting people.
I do. It's funny you mentioned the Modern Witch Tarot because it is very, it has that, it's not really flatness. I don't really know. Like I clearly did not have enough coffee this morning.
No, that's cool.
But it's got like the depth of field is different. Like Stacy's artwork, the digital painting has this very deep depth of field. Yeah. And this one is like a shallower depth of field and has that very modern illustrative look. But but you do really see Coleman's influence in every single card, like the arrangement and sometimes just the like. And I love that in the deck, you also talk about like the hand gestures and postures and stuff and how those have a layer of meaning as well.
Those are very important.
And how those are all captured in the cards is really lovely.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. That's really important. Because you never know what's going to inspire you. Where your eye's going to be drawn? Is it going to be drawn to a symbol in the card? Is it going to be drawn to something happening in the background, some color? And so we talk about that in the book. I definitely have a... the tarot code is what I've called it. And I've just broken down all of the symbolism in the tarot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when you were writing the book, which obviously happened before, I love that the deck kind of came after you started writing the book.
It did.
I didn't know that when I was reading it. And that makes it even a little more fascinating to think about how that all came together. But like who are your go-to tarot writers? Like where did you go when you were learning?
So when I first bought that first deck and I'm like, okay, I need to know what's going on. I went to YouTube and I just kind of did a search, you know, learn the tarot. And I came across the teachings of, it was a channel at the time. It's no longer in service, but it was called How It Works. And there was a series of, How It Works still is there, but the tarot series is no longer there. It was a series of how to read tarot, how to learn the tarot by Ellen Goldberg. And she is just, she's been in the industry, been a teacher and a tarot practitioner and a palm reader for like 40 years. And she's the School of Oracles up in New York. And I came across a couple of her videos and I loved her energy and I loved the way she explained all the cards. So I just devoured all of her videos. And then I came across the tarot lady, Teresa Reed, and I came across her podcast, Tarot Bites. And so I'm going on my walks and I'm listening to Tarot Bites. I'm getting in the car, you know, driving and doing whatever. And I'm listening to Tarot Bites and just devouring her work. I bought her books that as they came available, I was buying her books. I bought Mary Kay Greer's books and Rachel Pollack's books. Mm-hmm. And those were the four biggest names that really inspired. And I just started collecting all of their work and just devouring it, just reading it mm-hmm. voraciously and learning. The most important thing for me when I'm researching anything is to gain a real, you know, you want a broad spectrum. You want to understand all of the different points of view. Then you can perhaps be inspired to have your own or to develop your own. I already kind of had my own point of view. So I wanted mm-hmm. to see and hear what other people were doing. And you know, what was really interesting is that I was learning what these other gals were doing. I was really understanding that, okay, well, I kind of like my way of doing it. And I'm going to just stick with my gut and what my gut's telling me. And I appreciate their practices, but I'm really going to go down this lane. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what an effective storyteller does. They weave their own, you know, their own interpretations into their mm-hmm. writing, into their stories. And while you might be inspired by others, you certainly are not and should not be a photocopy. And you should not plagiarize their work, of course. So so while you might be able to see and, you know, kind of feel maybe some inspiration from, and certainly in this book you'll see references to those aforementioned authors' works, you will hopefully hear my voice because it, mm-hmm. it really did resonate through as I was researching.
Well, and I think that's one of the beauties of the tarot is that because of Pixies, Coleman's, however familiar you want to be, like, because of that influence and illustrating the pip cards, which I guess had been done in a couple other decks, but really this is the deck that kind of was the zeitgeist deck that really brought tarot, I guess, to the masses.
Yeah, it did.
Because it's illustrated throughout. Like, and like you said, you never know what's going to catch your eye. Like, every card is open to interpretation. But on its own against other cards mm-hmm. in your own life. Like, no one can tell you what your symbolism is. You've got to figure that out for yourself.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Like the Seven of Swords, for example. Mm-hmm. So many folks say the Seven of Swords. Oh, that means deception. That's trickery. That's somebody trying to take advantage. You know, they're mm-hmm. sneaky and running away. And from a writer's perspective, I look at the Seven of Swords and I see somebody who has all these ideas that they're running with, but they keep looking back at these other two ideas. And they have now shiny object syndrome. Oh, I need to go back and get these too. Or I need to pay. I'm mm-hmm. paying attention to these things over here, but I really need to be paying attention to what I'm working on in front of me.
Right.
So, yeah, I wholeheartedly believe you lead with your intuition. Mm-hmm. It will not lead you astray. And
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I find that really interesting with Oracle decks as well, since we talked mm-hmm. about Stacey's and some other ones. I work a lot with the Mildred Payne Pocket Oracle from DeviantArt. Not DeviantArt.
Yeah.
Oh, right now. Anyway, DeviantMoon. Sorry.
DeviantMoon. Yeah.
Yes. I was like, it was partly there. Yes. I really need more coffee.
Such an interesting deck. Love it.
Yeah. But like, and I love that Stacey, you know, that though the little bitty ones don't have any writing around them, you just kind of have to go. And there is a little white book that comes with them, but, and Stacey's card to have an idea to get you started on them. Yeah. But I'm always interested, like when you work with the deck, with a tarot deck, with an oracle deck, you come to know like where you agree with their interpretations and where you're like, I don't know. Cause one of the things with the Mildred Payne Oracle is the crow is very bad. Like the interpretation of the crow in the book is very bad. And I really see crows as like cleverness.
Clever.
And protection helpers. Because they recognize people who do them dirty.
That's right. So. That's right. And they gift people who do them, who gift them. If you're nice to them, they'll bring you trinkets.
Yeah. So it's written in the accompanying book as a bad omen. And I'm like, but are they?
But maybe not. It's like being at the dinner table, you know? Mm-hmm. You might not like sweet potatoes, and that's okay. You don't have to put them on your plate, but I'm about to put half my plate with sweet potatoes.
I'll eat yours too.
I love some sweet potatoes. So yeah. Both can be true.
Yeah. But I do love that. And I do think it's important. And it's funny, like when I was reading the book and you mentioned Rachel Pollack in the dedication.
Yes.
And then talk about her work. And I was like, and you know, and she was such an amazing writer as well. She in addition to like the quality of her nonfiction writing about tarot, which is incredible.
Yeah.
But just like her actual novels and comics and all of that, like just her writing was like such a world of imagination. And to see those archetypes come together was just like, oh, of course you would have been drawn to Rachel Pollack as a tarot reader and writer. So
the late great Rachel, she was so inspiring. All the way around. And it's how different too, her voice in her, as you mentioned, her comics. And then also when reading her nonfiction, because her comic series could not be more different than 78 Degrees of Wisdom, you know, which is just such a rich reference tool.
Yeah. But like even in Doom Patrol, like I will confess to not reading the comics. I've only watched the show. And I just wasn't a big comic reader until I married my husband.
Same.
And he's a big comic reader.
Yeah, they are.
But
they're graphic novels, though.
They are graphic novels, really. But you do see like her grasp of archetype so much, even in Doom Patrol. Like you really see it in the way the characters are fleshed out and how they interact with each other. Yeah. And I was like, this totally makes sense.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting? As we get to know her from the route through the lens of the tarot, then now we're picking up on those different, you know, those little tidbits and those inspirations and the fiction writing. Yeah, but the voice though is just it the feels like you're seeing, you're hearing two different sides of Rachel.
Yeah, and I love that. And when I was reading your bio, I was thinking about that you have, you know, pen names for the different kind of fiction you write.
Yeah.
And I mean, I guess they're riffs on your own name. That's kind of how my pen names are too. I don't really have like a true pen name that is not easily recognizable to me, but but it's like they do become different facets.
They do.
Like they kind of take on a personality, I guess, too.
They're different personas. Like, because I'm Amanda Hughes and, you know, call me Mandy, and I write nonfiction and I help authors to use the tarot to inspire creativity. When I write women's fiction, Southern Gothic fiction, literary fiction, then I'm A. Lee Hughes. And I specifically chose that name because I'm a Southern writer. And I thought, you know, what's going to resonate the whole idea of these stories that are coming out of the South? And I thought, well, okay, you know, take my first initial, middle name, last name, and we'll go with that. However, I also love fan fiction and, you know, rom-coms, and I'm a big fan of The Office. So I wrote a fanfic inspired by The Office, and I wrote it under, and I thought, well, that doesn't fit under A. Lee Hughes. So I'm like, okay, well, my pen name will be Mandy. And I have I've got a lot of stories for Mandy. A. Lee Hughes has kind of taken that, my writings and that genre has really taken a lot of my time and energy. So I've not done anything else with Mandy Lee, but it's coming. So I'm manifesting the time one day to be able to leave my muggle job, my muggle day job, and to write all the stories under both pen names.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I mean, that is the thing about writing is it just takes so much time.
It does, because it's not just writing. It's all the other things.
Yeah.
You know, whether you're self-published, certainly if you're self-published, you're a one-person show.
Yeah.
But then if you get a publishing contract, you still are responsible for a great deal of the marketing, you know, aspect. So,
I think that, you know, it's come up several times on the show, and I think it's good to remind people that, you know, the days of them just sending on this giant press junket and, you know, whining and dining you for most of us are over. Like that's even with a big trad house, it's Yeah. Unless you're a bestseller going in and they know that, yeah, and they're going to push you as a bestseller. Yeah. That's not the kind of treatment you get as a writer anymore.
Yeah. So we're manifesting the latter and preparing for the former.
That's right. You know? Exactly. So. Yeah. Like, it would be lovely. You know, yeah, yeah, I always, yeah, say, like, yeah, like, I'm not opposed to lightning striking in that way and having, yeah, a bestseller, but, you know,
give
also
me my tower moment, please. And yeah, let it just clear the road for me.
Yeah. But I'm also, like, you know, like, on kind of the flip side, and I've talked about this with a couple other folks who've been on the show, is I read Ian Halliday's Creative Not Famous, the Small Potato Manifesto.
Oh.
Which I recommend to a lot of people, especially self-published authors, because I think, you know, depending on when you started to self-publish, you know, like the six-figure author and all of those podcasts about, you know, making it big as a self-published author. And I was like, even in self-publishing, that kind of vanguard group, the reality is very different now.
Yeah.
Like, there's just so many people publishing and so many books come out every year, and just, yeah, finding your people at all is a wonder. And so that's really kind of what Creative Not Famous is about, is like doing the work and, you know, finding your core audience, whether or not, yeah, you ever make it big or not, like just, yeah, connecting, yeah, with your audience. So,
right. Yeah. To that point, doing the work, finding my audience and learning how to become successful. I'm doing air quotes. But, you know, successful is relative. But so finding my own type of success with self-publishing took a span of 10 years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it just took I like to reference also Brandon Sanderson. Mm-hmm. So you might know him, yeah, fantasy writer. And Brandon Sanderson, I learned, who has the most successful crowdfunding project ever, and supported one book for this $23 million crowdfunding project to bring one book to life. So Brandon Sanderson wrote 13 books, was over a span of 9 years, and was 48 years old when he first got his first publishing deal. And so I was like, oh, there's hope, because I'm 47. I've written 14 books over the span of 10 years. So I'm like, okay, I'm tracking. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to be the Southern Sanderson. I'm manifesting that. I want to be, that's what I'm, yeah, going to do. If he can do it, I can do it. And it, yeah, just takes, it takes persistence and consistency, mm-hmm, and just don't give up.
Yeah.
Just don't give up.
I really think that's it. And I mean, it is, you know, I joked, especially like the first four books, like right now it's kind of an expensive hobby. Like the money was not, yeah, mutually exchanging. No. But, no, you know, and then my husband and I started, when I got the rights back to my original books, I wasn't finished with the series. And my husband had worked for Ingram, and we were like, well, we'll just do this ourselves. And we started our own publishing company.
Yeah.
And, you know, this year, how many 10 years into writing, we're going to, yeah, break even. We're going to break even this year. Yeah. And that, yeah, feels like such a win.
Yes.
To just break even.
Finally, yes. Mm-hmm. And you know what? You didn't.
And granted, we're just breaking even for this year. We're not breaking even for all the money that I spent the last 9 years.
Well, hey, all of that was investment. All of that was investment for this journey, yeah, that you're on now. And look at there, you know, had you given up, you wouldn't be here.
Nope.
Now you're lapping everybody on the couch.
Yeah. And I tell myself that, you know, like what, well, I think it's always important in whatever you decide to do to define your own measure of success.
Yes. Yep. So. Exactly. And benchmarks, you know, I can be, mm-hmm, I can say, okay, I want to write a book. Boom. You've gotten that book, however long it, mm-hmm, took you, you've written, yep, that book. Now, what is my next benchmark? What is my next measure of success? Now I want to do this. And now I want to, you know, I want to self-publish. Okay. Now I want to get a publishing contract. Now I want to get on this person's radar, mm-hmm, and get a nice review from them. Now I want to be a Southern Sanderson and make millions of dollars. So that's my next, yeah, benchmark. Yeah.
I was not a bad benchmark to set yourself.
It's not. It's, yeah, it's going to happen.
Yeah. I think when I started writing, you know, I was looking at this big name, top of the bestseller list authors that could publish their laundry list and people would, yeah, buy it.
Oh, I'd read it.
And then, you know, now I'm like, okay, So who's really the grind? The grind are mid-list authors. Like, that's really where the grind is. That's where, that's where, you know, romance subsidizes the entirety of the publishing industry, even though people don't always like to talk about it. I will always tout that fact that most publishing houses survive on their romance line.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I think, you know, romance has gotten a short shrift for a long time because, how dare women write fan fiction about romance, you know?
Yeah, right. Oh, how dare there be so many different types and genres of romance, too? Mm-hmm,
yeah. So I think, you know, it's just interesting to figure out where you see yourself and where you want to be and like, what does that bridge look like to get there? And even if you don't get there, you've still done the striving to do it. You've done the work, you've put in the time, you've done the creative effort. And even if you're pantsing it, you know, you've got a goal.
Oh. Right. And the surprises that come along. So when you now find yourself having, you know, realizing these successes that you didn't even, you know, you didn't dream of, and then boom, they've happened for you. It just feels like such little gifts. You know, I thought that I wanted to do this, but my path led me this way. And now I'm even more successful than I was. Like, I thought I wanted to move forward and be like a best-selling author, like the next Colleen Hoover. And it didn't turn out that way for me. It's taking me, path is taking me over here in a totally different direction. And I'm going, and I'm seeing now my, the benchmark, it changes. And how lovely is that, that, you know, I'm looking around and as they say, you be grateful for the things that you have now, because they were the things that you prayed for or wished for or whatever that looks like for you in the past. But you know what? Sometimes the things that you want or you think that you want or your goals are probably, they might not be the best for you. And then the universe steps in and says, here, this thing is the best for you. Mm-hmm. And you're like, wow, didn't even know. And this, you know, now I'm
couldn't
like,
see it, didn't know it.
What a sweet surprise.
Yeah. No, I like that. Oh, well, I think that's a good place to kind of start to wind things down. But before we get to our last question, I want to give you an opportunity to plug.
Okay.
Plug away. Let people know where to find you, what's coming up. Like I said, this will air the middle of December. So it'll be pre-order time for the Mystic Storyteller.
All right. Well, as you're winding down, if for those of us in the Northern Hemisphere, you're winding down your year and getting settled into cooler temperatures and, you know, quiet, hopefully able to get some rest in. It's a good time to read. As you're in the Southern Hemisphere and getting ready for summer, it's a great time to read. So you can pre-order my book. Again, I'm Amanda Hughes, and my book, Mystic Storyteller, A Writer's Guide to Using the Tarot for Creative Inspiration, is being published by La Panthère Studio, and you can pre-order at lapantherestudio.com. You can find me and my side hustle, if you will, my business, and the business that I write under is Haint Blue Creative. And so Haint is Haint, bluecreative.com. And then that's also my handle on the socials. And I'm mostly active on Instagram at Haint Blue Creative.
Awesome. Cool. And we'll have links to all that in the show notes. Yes. You know, especially for people driving.
Fantastic.
You can go back and get that information later.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. So our last question is a little bit of a game of chance. And you mentioned your Gemini rising. I'm a double Scorpio.
Are you?
So is
my husband.
Yeah. So, we're good for you.
Hey, I love y'all.
Yeah. As I say, we can be some complicated people. But
y'all are great to write, though. Great characters to write, you Scorpios.
So this I always joke is, and you being Southern will also understand that I love to talk about stuff we're told we're not supposed to talk about when we're kids.
So I'm
going to roll a die, and depending on what number I get, you'll get a question about death, sex, religion, politics, or money.
Oof. Okay.
And if I roll a six, you get to pick. And because I like saying there's not really rules to this game, you can pass if you don't want that topic.
Okay. So, all right.
Let's see what we get. Two, sex.
Oh.
I want to talk about sex.
Okay. Let's talk about sex, baby. Yeah.
Can you tell that we're in Xers here in this podcast?
Right.
So if you're using the tarot to kind of plot things out, is there a card when you turn it over, you're like, I got to write a sex scene here.
Ace of Wands. It's so phallic. It's like, boom, it's ready.
Yeah.
It's ready. It's primed and ready.
Yeah.
Any of the knights, you know, any of them, the devil.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. You know, that's temptation. Oh, especially, yeah. And I love to write forbidden romance. All of my, whether I'm writing under A. Lee Hughes or Mandy Lee, there's some forbidden stuff there.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that. It's some devil energy there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I first started the podcast, I think it's still in the example questions is like, you know, if you're a fiction writer and you're writing somewhere publicly, like at the library or coffee shop or something, yeah. Like, how do you write a sex scene in public?
With your legs crossed.
Yeah. Like, I mean, have you done that? Have you had like, oh, I really hope nobody looks over my shoulder right now while I'm doing this kind of writing in public?
I wear all my emotions and everything on my face and in my armpits. Mm-hmm. So I'll write a little outline, and then I have to go into my studio, close the door, and lock it. And then be completely and totally not distracted to be able to put myself in that scene to be able to write it. So,
yeah,
no.
There's no writing a steamy sex scene at the local coffee roasters.
You know what? I would be sweating, and I'd be leaning and drooling. They'd be like, what is this woman doing? Is she having a seizure?
Well, the thing I always think about too, and I talk about this because I have a book club, and we mostly read romance, and we read a lot of very steamy romance. And it's such a good like brain cleanse for me. Like I so enjoy it. But one of the things I always joke about is when you're reading, especially like with alien characters or like shifters or like you have to think about like, where do the horns go? You know, like,
yes.
How does all of this work?
Yes.
And
yes.
So when I'm writing, like I find myself doing that. Like I don't have like, you know, the wooden posable modeling dolls or anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think about like, okay, if he's touching her here or she's touching her there, like what, how does that work? And where are everybody's hands? You know, like, and I have murdered people in public.
Which, that's fun.
Yeah. But the writing sex in public for me is harder than murdering people in public. Although I'm sure if somebody looked over my shoulder, I was murdering somebody. That would be awkward too.
You know, and because throwing your foot up on the table, your leg up on the table, and, you know, flailing back in your chair at Starbucks, it's going to get some attention.
Yeah,
and, you know,
just a little bit.
I want my work to get attention, but I don't want to be the center of attention.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and don't read over my shoulder. Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
Before we moved, when we still lived in East Tennessee, I went to this coffee shop that I still miss. I'm in California for 3 years now, and I still think about this place every day. But they had this one seat. There were like some shelves that they sold like, you know, cups and coffee and stuff on. And then a bench. And there was one little round table right up against that shelf on the bench. The wall was behind me.
Yeah.
My favorite place. Like I would get there as early in the morning as I get there and hope that that place was open because it was my favorite place to sit and write.
Yes. But, how inspiring too. That's a comfort zone right there. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And then you can look up and see everybody. And I'm a people watcher. So now I can see everything that's happening.
Yeah. And plus I've talked about this and people are probably like, Victoria, you've said this thing 1,000 times. But there's something about that noise, that coffee shop noise that just is like, I don't know, gasoline for my brain in a weird way. Like it just really works for me. And I've tried like the YouTube videos and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But I think you're right. It's the movement and the positioning as much as it is the sound. Found.
Oh. Yep. Yeah. And, you know, maybe that caffeine is somehow by osmosis, you know, getting into your brain.
Exactly.
Even if you're not drinking it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Well, I hope people will pre-order the book when they hear this, because I think as a writer, it's really, I mean, I know a lot of people have talked about using the tarot for creative inspiration, but if you wondered about how to make that work, this is the book for you.
Yes. I'm hopeful that it will help anybody. You might not even have an idea of the story that you want to write, but if you'll get this book by the end of it, you'll have it fully drafted.
Yeah.
I'm convinced.
Yeah. And you'll have, you know, a cheerleader to help you along the way.
Absolutely, you will. Great. And I'm full of all kinds of resources. I'm constantly giving out all kinds of stuff through my website, through Instagram. I'm constantly giving away tools and giving away my books and anything I can give. You get a tool and you get a tool and you get a tool. Anything. So yes, I love championing other authors and helping them grow.
Yeah. All boats rise. That's the way I look at it.
That's right. You know, that's right.
Like, yeah.
Yep. Well, just heard that yesterday.
Yeah. Mandy, thank you so much for coming on. And thanks for writing this book. And
it's been an absolute pleasure.
I'm excited for what the future holds for you and your $1 million movie contract.
Thank you. Likewise. Thank you. I will share updates along the way and we'll help each other along the way.
Awesome. Witchlit is a production of Thousand Volt Press and is edited by Julian Rashke. Our intro music is Cosmic Glow by Andrew Kay, and our outro music is Voices by Alexander Shenetkar. Transcripts and all our previous episodes are available at witchlitpod.com, and you can follow us on Instagram or Threads at witchlitpod. Please help other witches find us by leaving a rating or review wherever you listen to podcasts. And thank you for listening to and reading Witchlit.